Hello and welcome to Into the Wild, the podcast that brings you animal facts, wildlife updates and nature stories from the professionals to you. On this week's show, I spoke with wildlife filmmaker and presenter Billy Heaney. Billy is quickly becoming a well-known online presenter for wildlife, specialising in his camera trap work. We spoke about how these cameras can not only help grab the best footage possible, but also stop from disturbing the animals and ensuring to get that wild shot. Billy also recounts a moment he had a near miss with a black bear in the wild, and his off-the-cuff trip to Jura in Scotland, where he was lucky enough to see grouse, otters, and even a golden eagle. I'd like to remind you all, my listeners, that this episode was recorded from a narrowboat in London. Whilst I did my best, I apologise for any background noise. Thanks so much for joining, and enjoy the show. Hi, Billy, mate. Thanks so much for joining me for this chat. How are you doing?
I'm good, mate. Thank you so much for having me on. It's a beautiful day down here in Gloucestershire, and I'm sure you can hear the sparrows singing out the window, but yeah, no, thanks
yeah,
for having
it
me
sounds,
on.
Yeah, it sounds idyllic where you are right now.
Yeah, well, they do wake you up at 6:30 every morning, but there's worse ways to be woken up in the morning, I tell you.
Yeah, exactly. So you said you're in Gloucestershire at the moment, is that right?
Yes, so currently in lockdown in Gloucestershire. My sort of plans to find a new place to live with my girlfriend didn't quite go to plan, but we are in a very lucky position that we are spending lockdown at her parents' house in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by woods and fields, and yes, very lovely place to be spending lockdown, enjoying everything that's going on outside the windows.
Oh, nice one. Yeah, that's kind of the perfect place when you're not allowed to leave. You don't want to really be in a city at a time like this, do you? You want to be in the middle of nowhere where you can just chill and
exactly.
Be surrounded by wildlife.
Very fortunate that there's lots of wildlife literally right over the back fence, which I'm sure we'll go into detail very, very shortly.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on that note, so I found you on Twitter. It's been a good time for me to kind of find more presenters, filmmakers and everything like that. And I was looking for you've done some amazing things and your filmmaking work is fantastic. But a question that I kind of ask all the guests that I have on the show is, when did your love for nature and wildlife and animals begin for you?
Cool. Well, thank you very much for all that. It's very nice of you to say. I'm glad you like everything that I'm doing. Yes, so I've been an animal geek since, well, you know, the young age of two, sort of grew up watching the greats, obviously Mr. Attenborough himself, and, you know, I was of the generation watching Steve Irwin and Jeff Corwin,
yes.
So they were kind of like my child, you know, my boyhood heroes were sort of those guys, and very lucky that I had, my grandparents were very into their bird watching, and we spent, you know, many afternoons at the weekend with them out at a local nature reserve that I grew up on. And, you know, it was my nan who got me my first bird book when I was probably, you know, four or five, and a little pair of binoculars, you know, only a cheap pair, but they were, you know, that's what hooked me in. And so most of our weekends when we were at my grandparents or, you know, whenever we went around, we were, you know, packed lunch was made, put in a rucksack and we're out walking for the afternoon. And then, yeah, just looking at sort of, you know, swans and geese and stuff like that on the local patch. And that kind of, that was encouraged and that's kind of what spurred me on. And obviously watching all documentaries, more animal books. You know, bath time when I was a kid was just plastic animals galore. You could barely get me out of the thing. But and then that's kind of how it all happened. And then once, when I went to uni at 18, moved to Cornwall, and I found myself going from sort of the landlocked Hearts-Essex border to living right on the coast, and had this whole banquet of coastal wildlife right at my doorstep. And then it kind of just went mad for me a little bit, and found myself, you know, watching seals, and very lucky to be working on a wildlife tour boat, looking at dolphins.
Wow.
And stuff like that at the weekend. So yes, that's kind of, you know, the very, very quick version of, yeah, how that kind of, how I got carried away into the world of flora and fauna, really.
Yeah, and you mentioned like Attenborough and Steve Irwin, which is very similar to, I think, everyone, and especially myself, of people that inspired you.
Yes.
What was it about those kind of people, those presenters, that kind of inspired you into that world? Was it something they did particularly that you like, kind of loved or kind of aspired to be like?
Yes, I think my first memories of watching Attenborough probably was Life of Mammals, and I can still remember, like, you know, the old VHS, or, you know, the huge fat TVs with the huge back. I can still remember sitting in my front room with the Life of Mammals intro going on and the credits at the end with the kangaroos. I can still remember that vividly. So that was kind of like the first series of Attenborough that I think was, you know, that hooked me. And obviously he's just, well, he's God, isn't he? So it's just, and just, you know, having that in your living room weekly was something like that. And on the flip side, it was then having, you know, a very gentle, well-spoken, man compared to then you've got the, and then the enthusiastic, you know, over the top Steve Irwin that's jumping off boats looking at crocodiles. It's sort of, then you've got the, you know, a very different style of presenting that was all equally as engaging and exciting. So, you know, to have those two sort of, yeah, kind of bouncing off each other, in, you know, as little 5-6 year old Billy watching them, that's this, yeah, kind of aspired to do something like that with my life if I was lucky to do so, really.
Yeah, I think I saw someone the other day, this really made me laugh, just suddenly tweeted just saying, during all this, has anyone checked in on David Attenborough? I was like, oh my God, who has? Like,
yeah, bless him. I saw some funny articles go around that someone knocked on his door and I think his daughter was there and yeah, she answered and it was quite a funny post. But yeah, no, he's doing some BBC bite-sized geography lessons, which I know are aimed at teenagers or young kids, but I'm definitely going to tune in and watch them.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's, I think anything so, Attenborough does, no matter what the ages is for, anyone in that, you know, kind of, well, not even that field, yeah. I was going to say that interest, but actually not, no. Whenever Attenborough does anything, it captures everyone, doesn't it? It's a real kind of, I don't know, just, I don't want to sound really cliche or, but a real heart of the nation, isn't it? It just really captures everyone.
He is, and he does, and that's what's brilliant about him, is no matter your background, no matter what you're interested in, everyone relates to him and everyone looks forward to his next series. So, you know, it's fantastic, and he is obviously a national treasure and is just phenomenal at what he does.
Yeah, absolutely. But let's talk about your work, because this has been something that I want to talk about. So during lockdown, you've been setting up camera traps for local wildlife around you.
Yes.
What kind of things have you seen so far?
Well, it's been, I've been doing this for around, a month now. I think it's a month to the day that I set the first camera trap up. I set them up just before lockdown at the end of March. And, so very lucky that we have a woodland, which is literally, I walk out of the gate of the house and within 4 minutes, I'm under trees and I'm on, you know, there's public footpaths, but there's quite nice places just to get off the path and just sit under trees and set up some camera traps. So it took me a little while, actually. It took me a few weeks of, you know, getting to know my new patch because I've recently moved here, or figuring out where things were. So obviously with the exciting thing and also the infuriating and frustrating thing about camera traps is it can be, you know, trial and error. But I hit gold quite quickly. I was fine looking for badger sets. I'm very lucky that around here, you know, there's just holes everywhere. If you're not looking where you're going, you're going to fall down one. So I found a badger set and set my old camera traps on there. And then I've got some activity. And then I sort of was like, treat myself to a new one, which I'm very glad that I did, because the contrasting quality was phenomenal. And then I was getting some regular activity there. But then it wasn't quite the shots I wanted, and then found myself on my, as part of my daily permitted exercise, I went for a walk in the woods for, between half an hour a day, looking for signs of nature, and because I was seeing foxes over the back fence. Very lucky that I can actually see foxes most days running behind the garden, and knew that there must be more badgers, that I must be able to see where these foxes are going. And then it took me a little bit longer, and then I found a really active badger set. And then I've been staking out ever since. But what's really lush is this area where the badgers are is a really nice little wildlife corridor where I'm getting, the foxes going through, lots of badgers, loads of rabbits, crikey, rabbits everywhere, and also the odd muntjac and roe deer. So it's a really awesome little hub. So I'm getting lots of activity and it's been really exciting. And, the highlight of, at first when I was looking for areas, I was going fairly regularly, but now that I know my area well, I'm only going once a week now, so the payoff to them wait each week to go and check the cameras is so exciting when you go, and then you put that memory card in the computer and it's just like you've got 200 files that you're going through, but the kettle goes on and it's exciting.
Amazing. Yeah, what a treat to have to look forward to during a week as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's the highlight of the week for sure.
Yeah, so do you find now you know the area, you kind of just know the spots to go to? It took a week or so to get used to that, and then now you're like, these are the hotspot areas.
Yeah, it took me a good fortnight of trial and error of moving. I've got two camera traps that I'm using, so it took me a good fortnight of trial and error of like, are they using this path? Is this a good little network? And the area where I am now, looking at the set, there's quite a lot of holes that look really active and some don't, and it took me another good week and a half to figure out where the main hub was. And now that I know, obviously I'm limiting my time there because I don't want to be there too often, and when I do check the cameras, it's literally battery change, memory card, get out of there and then leave the area to it, kind of thing. So nice quick maneuver. It's just so rewarding when you watch it back.
And are these camera traps that you're using around you now, are these similar to the ones, or the same as you use on field trips as well?
So I actually treat myself to some new models. So I'm using this American brand called Browning. And yeah, I got recommended them by a mate. So recently invested in those. But they're, you know, they're kind of similar to ones that I've used before. So I used some Bushnells in the past, which is my old camera traps, a Bushnell, which I bought when I was 18 and had a lot of fun with that through the years. But no, over the years, I've used Bushnells to monitor. So part of my master's by research, I studied grey seals in Cornwall for the University of Exeter. And we used a series of camera traps stationed on a cliff. So we programmed them to take a picture every 5 minutes of every hour during daylight hours of every day. So as much as, you know, grey seals are, you know, charismatic, iconic marine marine megafauna in the UK. When you're looking at pictures of them on a beach where they look like furry slugs day in, day out, it's a hard one. You get a lot of data. But this, what's great about camera traps is you can deploy them in areas. They're pretty robust, and you don't need to spend, as much as it's great being in the field, if it's absolutely hacking it down with rain and it's freezing, you don't need to be out there doing it. And obviously, equally, if you use it in a woodland, you don't need to be up all night trying to get a glimpse of a badger. I know that's really fun, and admittedly, I'm still doing that over the back fence. But we'll come back to that. But it's just great because you can leave them to it, and you know, most of the time, they work pretty well. And then I've used... been quite lucky that I've used them in Scotland quite a few times. I was making a film with... a good mate of mine and filmmaker Isaac Rice, and we were making a film called Virtually Wild, and one day we were just filming some, funnily enough, filming seals, and then we came across some otter spraying. We were on the Isle of Mull, and we were like, blimmin' hell, this is a lot of otter poo, and we need to, this obviously is a scent marking, they're marking their territory, and we were only on there for a few days, so, you know, typically for stuff like that, you might want to leave it a week, but we only had 2 nights that we could leave it, so we thought, well, it's worth a shot, you know, we're not expecting anything, and we set this camera trap up looking at this rock where this otter obviously came in and took a dump, and we came back 2 days later, and we just got this most amazing shot of three otters running around these rocks. And so that was what still is one of my all-time camera trap highlights, because it was just jammy more than anything. because you're thinking it's an otter, it's going to be a bit cryptic, but we found obviously a reliable source, but I literally stumbled upon it. I put my foot in it whilst I was walking across these rocks, and then so that was great. And then another sort of good highlight was I was very lucky to go to Vancouver Island back in 2016, and I set a camera trap up there, and at this area where I heard black bears walk through. And again, obviously trial and error, I had my positioning of the camera wasn't the best, but I've learned a lot since then. But I set it up, and I sort of, the camera got triggered, and I can see the sort of top shoulders and back and bum and head of a black bear, and the camera's on a branch, and it's and then as the camera's been triggered, it's sort of getting thrown about and the camera's shaking, and then the camera falls off and lands in the grass. When I found the camera, obviously it was on the ground, I was like, oh, crikey, what's happened here? And then I went back through and watched it, and that happened 20 minutes before I retrieved the camera. Christ. So I can only assume that it was a mother bear with her cub, and the cub had obviously smelt something or was like, what on earth is that? And was playing with this branch, and it fell off. But yeah, so it was awesome. I mean, the shot itself was a little bit naff, but the story was amazing, and it was just there. When I went back through the file and saw the timestamp on it, I was like, flipping heck, that was 20 minutes before I got there.
Did you kind of get out of there quick, or did you...
Yeah, it was just like with that one, because of it was my old camera trap, so it doesn't have a screen on it where you can review the footage in situ that well. But it was when I got home, I got back to where I was staying, and I put it into the laptop and then watched it. I was like, oh. I've got badgers on the brain. That bear was probably, you know, in the woods not far away, and probably had seen me, at least definitely smelt me. So that was really exciting. But now it's just straight into, you know, Gloucestershire woodlands and stuff like that.
Where you're not as concerned if you're 20 minutes behind a badger. Well, saying that, they can be a bit.
For different reasons. You just want to sort of leave them to it. And what I love about the camera traps is it is non-invasive. Obviously, I know you need to go and check, replace the batteries and the memory card, but I've got it down to a fine art now where I'm there for about a minute by the camera just to quickly put the new batteries in, slot them in, put the memory card back in, and then I leave it to it. So that's the beauty of it. It's non-invasive. And what's really exciting for me is I wake up in the morning, I go brush my teeth, I look out the bathroom window, and I can see the patch of brambles where I know my badgers are. And the last thing I do at night at the minute is at 8:30, I go peer over the back fence and have a look. And every now and then I do get a glimpse of a badger sort of going out foraging on this field through my binoculars. But last night and the night before, I even could hear the badgers chattering in the brown. Oh, so as much as I couldn't see them, but I know that my camera's seeing them. I can't see them, but I can hear them. It's just like, what? And it's just a really lovely way to sort of spend an evening, really.
Yeah, it's like a trailer for what's to come for you at the end of the week.
Yeah, and it's a tease, and it's just like, oh, God, I hope the camera's got that kind of thing. Like, I can hear them, so I know they're up to something. I just hope, you know, my angle's good and everything. But yeah, no, so it's really exciting.
And you mentioned the otters as being like a highlight, and I think I remember you seeing you. Is that something you posted on social media recently?
It would have been... the otters, yes, I did see otters this year. I went up to Scotland to visit a mate, he lives on Isla. So I did see otters this year, but that camera trap footage that we were talking about earlier was from, not last year, but the year before.
Oh, cool. Because I remember seeing you post something and it was like you were very excited about it.
Yeah, so I think minus what I'm seeing with my badgers at the minute, that my highlight of the year so far, wildlife-wise, was very lucky that I got back from Scotland 2 weeks before lockdown. So I managed to have a quick 2 week adventure in the Bonnie North. I sort of went and visited my old housemate and we stayed at his folks in the Cairngorms and for a few days when it, you know, massive amount of snow. Mm. It was phenomenal. And we saw golden eagle over the Cairngorms.
Incredible.
Yeah, over a snow-topped mountain hill. It was a big hill. I don't think it was technically a mountain, but big hill. And a golden eagle came soaring over it, and we saw snow buntings and, you know, and grouse and stuff like that. But he lives on Isla. So when we went back over to Isla, had some amazing few days there watching all the overwintering barnacle geese and white-fronted geese that come over from Greenland. That was brilliant. And we saw golden eagles sort of from a distance flushing them, because obviously the eagles will eat the geese over the winter. Mm. But one day me and my girlfriend, we drove over to Jury, get a little ferry which is 5 minutes over, and we spent about half a day driving around Jura, which considering how close the islands are, they're so different in their sort of landscape and geography. So Jura is very hilly, and you know, it's red deer galore, and they're so used to people that you can sort of wind your window down from your car and, you know, they're right there. So I got, there was amazing views of these great big stags, and we saw a white-tailed seagull, and then I kept seeing all these rocks, and obviously I've spent a few time in the last few years visiting Scotland looking for otter, and you sort of try and get your eye in of like what habitat would be good. Mm. And then I saw this little patch of rocks, and we just found this like little five berth car park that was on a bit of dirt, really. And then there was a couple of cars there, and one pulled out, and I was like, oh, that looks like a nice spot just to sit for 10 minutes and have a little scan, you know, have a drink and just have a little look. And I saw, literally there for about 5 minutes, and there's, you know, a few shags and stuff, and then I saw this weird ripple out the corner of my eye, and I was like, oh, better check it. It's probably just a cormorant that slipped under the water that I missed.
Yeah,
but best check, because this looks like a really good spot for otters. And then blimmin' hell, this the ripple sort of then started again, and up popped an otter, and I was like, so obviously luckily we were in the car because I shouted. obviously that would have been a no-go if I was outside of the car, but luckily I won't repeat what I did say, but I made Sarah jump, and then what was amazing is we then managed to watch this otter for nearly half an hour, and I managed to
really
and I learned this on a field trip. So with otters, a little tip is if you're watching them and they go under the water, it's a bit like Granny's footsteps, or, you know, what's the time, Mr. Wolf? You sort of try and get a little bit closer and sit down again. So then when they pop out, you sort of, and obviously keep your head underneath, you know, if you've got a group of rocks, don't stand up or everything, keep your under sort of the horizon line sort of thing, so you sort of blend in. But yeah, so we managed to creep, you know, maybe 10 meters outside of the car just to sit down by this patch of rocks just so we could get a little bit nearer. And we saw the otter come out of the water up to this little thicket of scrub, and then we sat there and we left it a little bit, and then he came, I think it was a dog otter, it was quite big. Mm. Came scurrying back down the rocks again and slipped back into the water, and then when he was under the water we snuck back to the car and he came up and we left him as he was. He was still fishing and happy, you know, all by himself, didn't even know we were there, and managed to snap a couple of pictures. And yeah, it was just absolutely phenomenal, and felt very lucky that, yeah, I was probably watched him for nearly half an hour, and then it was like, right, let's go have a sandwich, that, you know. And then to top
what an amazing experience.
And then we had a female hen harrier. We was driving back to the ferry, and then this hen harrier, it's a bird that I've seen before but only ever, you know, quite distantly, and then she was really close, and then I managed to get some pictures of her for out the car window. Yeah, it was just a very surreal couple of hours with the wildlife that we saw. yeah, just a phenomenal place. Yeah. And it was, and a whiskey distillery as well. So, you know, so I stocked up as well while we were there. So, yes, wasn't a bad day.
I was just about to say, like, and, you know, Jura, also very good for whiskey.
Yeah, I've still got it. I haven't had it yet. I'm waiting for, like, a good, maybe for end of lockdown, then I'm gonna pop that open.
Oh, mate, you're in lockdown now. Treat yourself.
Treat myself. Maybe next time.
I saw that you're an ambassador for Marine Life UK. Can you tell us a bit about what that organisation does?
Yes, of course. So Marine Life is a great UK-based charity, and they sort of conserve marine wildlife through research and education. So that I've been lucky enough to be out on a couple of their surveys. So whilst I lived in Cornwall, I worked on this boat regularly, and we did quite a bit with Marine Life before I became an ambassador for them, doing surveys for seabirds and cetaceans and you know, stuff like that. So the stuff I've seen out with Marine Life has been fantastic, with you know, common dolphin, rizzos, bottlenose dolphin, minke whale, and loads of shearwaters, and you know, orcs, puffins, guillemots, razorbills, and a variety of other seabirds, and, you know, gannets and stuff. Like, can't go wrong with a gannet or a skewer, you know, a nice big thug of a seabird that, you know, I've seen mobbing a gannet before, and the gannet then regurgitated this fish, and then gannet flew off, and then the skewer came down and ate it. Anyway, I digress. But one that just sticks in my memory. But they do a lot of sort of training days. I've helped do a couple of these now, sort of doing seabird identification courses and cetacean ID courses, and, you know, there's a little bit of other marine vertebrates in there as well, with like basking sharks and seals and stuff like that. But it's great, and they sort of do lots of collaborations. They do ferry routes, and they sort of conserve the wildlife of the oceans and coasts through scientific investigation and educational activities, and you can support them by, you know, donating £3 a month. It's something that I think they'd really appreciate right now with everything that's going on, because obviously they are a charity, and it's a very tough time for small organisations and charities. So if you can donate £3 a month, or, you know, when things get back to normal and they can run their education courses again, they're still very reasonable. I don't think they're more than £20. I could be wrong on that, but it's not an expensive day, and it's a good day, and it's a really nice thing. And once you've done the training day, you can become a volunteer, and if you've got a local patch, you can sort of sign up to get involved with some of their sort of surveys and stuff like that.
That's amazing. So I mean, because marine life, I think, has been a focus around the world in the last few years as well, for wildlife conservation, for the mainstream, certainly in regards to plastics being brought to the highlight of everything. For the UK, I think it's quite common for people to naturally think abroad when we're looking at wildlife, and certainly marine life. What kind of abundance, I mean, you've said quite a few species just there, but what kind of abundance of wildlife do we have around the UK for marine?
Oh, for marine stuff, we're, you know, we've got heat, and it's so exciting. It's just like, and, you know, you don't obviously need to spend a bit of time to spot marine life, but if you're fortunate enough to live near the coast in some areas of the UK, you know, the southwest is great, Pembrokeshire coastline in Wales, Scotland, and places in the North Sea around the Farns in particular, we're very lucky with what we got, and I mean, the list is endless, really.
Yeah.
For me, I've been very lucky. I mean, I've put the hours in, don't get me wrong, I've spent many hours on a boat seeing Naffle, but I've been very lucky where other days it's been like an episode of Blue Planet, and it's just, you know, from tiny harbour porpoises to huge humpback and sperm whales that, you know, get recorded off our coasts.
Oh, wow.
I'm yet to see a humpback I'm very lucky that I've seen humpbacks elsewhere in the world, but I'm yet to see one in the UK, as much as I've narrowly missed out on them because they've been swimming past Cornwall the last few years.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have orca in the UK, especially around Scotland. We do have a resident population, unfortunately they're not doing very well, they haven't bred in quite a long time, but we've got the West Coast community with John Coe and a few of the others that got quite unique fins, but the last few years in particular we're getting a lot of orcas coming to like Shetlands and Orkney, and even to the top of mainland Scotland. And what's really exciting is they're getting fin matches, because with cetaceans, you know, their dorsal fin, if they've got one, is a really good way. It's like a fingerprint for a human. It's a really easy way. They often have nicks or bits chopped off, or, you know, where they've had injuries and stuff, so you can tell them apart. And there's been, I think it's 12, I could be wrong, but it's about 12 or 13 matches now of dorsal fins between Iceland and Scotland, which is just fantastic.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And I follow this quite a lot because, you know, I'm a massive orca dork, and it was a dream of mine to be able to go and see orcas in the wild for, you know, since I was two. And I went with a couple of mates to Iceland back in February, March 2016, and again, that we built that up, but we were so lucky to have just the most amazing encounter with a pod of orca on the west coast of Iceland. And the company that we went out with, they do some really cool research, and one of the ladies that we were on the boat, she's the one who's doing all these fin matches between Scotland. So it's great that I know the people doing it. Well, I've met them, I don't know them, but I've met them, and yeah, it's just super exciting. And so the marine life we get around the UK doesn't just stay here. Obviously the humpbacks that travel through and go past Scotland on the way up to Norway, for instance, could have been in the Caribbean earlier on, you know what I mean? And it's just like, and the Irish Sea, you get sort of fin whale and blue whale get recorded in there sometimes. Yeah. And yeah, I think a lot of people think for whale watching and see dolphins and stuff, you got to go to these far flung places. But, you know, we get so much wildlife on our doorstep, and I think it's a good time to appreciate that. Now, obviously, I know people, it's hard, unless you live right on the coast at the minute and it's within, you know, walking distance from your house, it's obviously, it's a different situation, but it's, we're very lucky with what we do have here. And yeah, the list is endless of what we can see.
Yeah, absolutely. And my final question, and again, this is a question that I always ask to the guests that I have on the show, but if you could pass on one bit of advice to the generation of today in regards to the natural world, what would you pass on?
Just enjoy it. And more, I think that's the most, especially with times like this, it's, for me, nature is an escape, and it's kind of an easy way just to, whatever your, you know, stresses are during the day, if you've got, obviously now you have to appreciate your 5 minutes outside in your local patch, but just immerse yourself in it. You know, start small. If you've got a nice garden, what's in your garden, put a bird feeder up, lift that plant part up, or lift that little bit of stone. Get yourself a pair of binoculars, and you know, you don't have to spend a lot of money, just get, if you've got some old wildlife books, bird books. Birds are a great way in the UK to get your eye into wildlife, because you know, we're quite lucky that we get a lot of birds in people's gardens, and that's how I started, really. And just enjoy it, and yeah, appreciate it. And I just find it's a great way, you know, at the end of the, I'm spending a lot of time at a computer at the minute. And obviously, I know that I'm going, you know, for a walk in the woods to check my camera traps at the weekend. But in the evening, I look over the back fence, and the last couple of nights, it's just been, I'm listening to a tawny owl and watching the bats go over my head and trying to get a glimpse of the fox. And for me, that's just the perfect way to finish the day. So, yeah, just enjoy it and appreciate it and make the most of it, really, because it's really special. And I think it's something that everyone should take value and pride in, really. Enjoy what's on your local patch.
Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree. And I certainly agree with the escapism in nature and wildlife.
Absolutely.
It's perfect. Perfect form of meditation.
Exactly.
Well, Billy, thank you so much for joining me on this show. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. And like I said, I'm a big fan of your work and everything you're putting up on social media. So I'll urge people to follow you and check that out as well. Take care and enjoy the rest of your camera traps and stay safe during the lockdown.
Yeah, and like yourself, likewise, hope it all goes well and stay safe. Thank you so much for having me on. It'd be great to chat again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's make sure everyone keeps washing those hands.
Absolutely. What a great way to end. Do remember to wash those hands.
Wash your hands.
Take care, Billy. Thank you.
Cheers, bud. Thank you.
Thanks again for tuning in to Into the Wild. If you'd like to keep up to date with the projects and shows that Billy is working on, you can do so on Instagram and Twitter at Billy Heaney. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and Twitter and share a review. You can also get in touch on social media at Into the Wild Pod. Until next time, keep well, stay safe, and live the good life.